The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. It took a while, but we certainly had the Supreme Court. I don't know if the Supreme Court's in our favor for City of Grants Pass v. Johnson or not. I really don't know at this point. But I did want to talk with Mark Miller. Mark Miller is with the Pacific Legal Foundation, and he has written on Fox News about this case. And you also wrote an amicus brief in the Grants Pass case, didn't you, Mark? Welcome back to the show. Good to have you on.
It's always good to join you, Bill. Yes, in fact, we Pacific Legal and I was the author, submitted actually two briefs in the case, one at the original stage when Grants Pass asked the court to take it. We supported that idea. And then another one on the merits where we supported the government, the city, which is unusual for Pacific Legal. We're usually in the business of suing governments, not supporting them. But in this case, we made an exception.
What, for people that don't know, what is the basic of the case that the City of Grants Pass is trying to get the Supreme Court to look at here? Because it's not trying to get us back to the point where we once were able just to say, hey, you're a vagrant, move along. Or is it about, hey, you're a vagrant, move along? What's the basics of
well,
this?
Well, I think the basics are, and the way the Supreme Court framed the question, is effectively, do the homeless have a right to sleep or camp on public property mm-hmm. in a town, unless the town has enough homeless beds for all the homeless? Then the city would be able to. But the Ninth Circuit, the Court of Appeals out there on the West Coast, said that unless you have enough public beds available, and it can't be religious beds, it can't be that rescue mission, that gospel rescue mission that Grants Pass.
Oh, yeah, because that gospel rescue mission, there are rules, and boy, we need a place that people can drug themselves into oblivion. That's what we need, right? That's what we got to do.
Yeah, and that was something that came up in the argument, and I think that the Gospel Rescue Mission, in fact, filed a brief in the case, and that does hurt the homeless advocate's position. I don't know that they actually wanted this to be part of the ruling, but the lower court had said that we shouldn't count religious beds, if you will, like the Gospel Rescue Mission, when we count whether there are enough public beds for the homeless in the community, because they said that could violate First Amendment rights of the homeless. And I think that's a bit of a stretch for the justices. And to say that we're going to say you can't, the city cannot do anything about the homeless who are camping on public property unless there's enough public beds, and then that those beds can't even be, you know, a city rescue mission or a Catholic church providing homeless shelters, which is not unusual in this country. It seems a bit too much, at least a lot of the justices seem to think.
So we have people who are homeless, right? And so you're kind of like a beggar's, but a beggar is supposed to be a chooser, according to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And if you were to go and stay at a religious-based institution, there's a chance you would be infected by that, and that cannot be allowed? Is that essentially where the courts are coming, that you would be in, you could be infected by the religious underpinning of an organization? Could that be it?
You know, the Ninth Circuit position, you know, there was a lot of leaps in logic to reach what I would think, such an absurd result, which, again, is not to in any way underplay the sympathy and empathy we should have for the homeless. But there were so many leaps in logic that the appeals court took. And one of them was this idea that not only do the homeless have a right to public beds before they can be fined for being homeless, which is what Grants Pass wants to do in order to help address the problem, but rather you can't even be religious bed. And then you have to, you know, this incredible requirement that the courts are putting on local governments in terms of the tax impact, the idea that cities are going to have to provide beds to the homeless at city expense, at taxpayer expense. I'm hard pressed to think that the Supreme Court is, and particularly after the oral argument, is going to say that the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment clause requires as much. We've never seen that before.
So you're thinking because cruel and unusual punishment, but cruel and unusual punishment is usually connected with a trial and you have been convicted kind of thing. Isn't that right? Isn't that what that's normally considered?
Exactly. And that's what Justice Gorsuch was trying to make the point. He was making the point that the cruel and unusual punishment clause in the Eighth Amendment usually is about punishment. The Supreme Court once, in a case called Robinson, and this was a lot of the discussion in the oral argument earlier this week, once said you can't punish someone for being a drug addict. You can punish them under the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment clause. You can punish them if they're using drugs,
right,
or selling drugs. Or
yeah, and that
drugs.
Makes sense. Just because you're by nature, right. I look at you and say, oh, you're a drug addict. I can't put you in jail. Right. We're not going to do that.
Exactly.
And I get that.
And the homeless here, there to make the analogy for the homeless advocate side of it. They're saying being homeless is like being a drug addict. Oh. Chief Justice Roberts had nothing, did not like that opinion. He was arguing vociferously, both with the lawyer making that argument and with Justice Jackson, who was trying to make the argument. And that's often what oral argument is about. It's about the justices arguing with each other.
Oh, no.
Subtly.
Yeah.
Side eye wise. And that was definitely happening here.
Yeah. Yeah. And that went for what, 2.5 hours? They thought it was only going to go for an hour. So there was a lot of back and forth on this particular case, wasn't there?
Yes. This was a particularly long oral argument. Since the pandemic, the court has changed a lot of its rules, one of which has been great because it's led to Justice Thomas asking questions. We all know for decades he did not speak, but they're much more formal in the way they ask questions. They go in sort of an order of seniority. Mm-hmm. And so Thomas now asks questions. But another thing is that hour that we used to see was very strict. Now they will go on, as they did in this case, as you said, for 2.5 hours. They don't normally go that long, but they don't follow that 1 hour rule that they used to follow.
That's good, though, in this case, because this case needs to be fleshed out. My concern about the way the Ninth Circuit has raped the West Coast or its district here, in my opinion, Mark, I'm just giving you my opinion, is that essentially they're saying that, hey, it's a really nice town you have here, and we're going to hold your town at ransom. You either build the homeless industrial complex, or else is essentially what's going to happen. You're going to lose all of your public parks. That's essentially what they've said, is it not? It's like holding your parks at ransom, your public spaces.
And the Ninth Circuit tries to deny that, but I would agree that that is the logical consequence of their opinion, that either they get to camp on your public property or you're going to have to build very expensive homeless shelters at taxpayer expense, which, as you said, you know, if you take money one place, you got to take it from somewhere else. If you put money one place, you got to take it from somewhere else. And that's what would happen here.
You wrote a piece on Fox, which I think is very important to take a look at here. And by the way, Mark Miller is with Pacific Legal Foundation, pacificlegal.org. And you have been fully involved in this and other property rights disputes here. And this, I guess, is a dispute over public property. And do you have to use it? You know, is there a right to be able to use this? Don't you find it interesting, though, that human needs are being turned into human rights at an alarming rate at this point? There is a need to sleep when you're human. I get that. But does that mean that you have a human right to take over a park to do it? That kind of thing.
And Chief Justice Roberts was making that very point, Bill. He said, look, if you can say that, look, I'm homeless, I have nowhere else to sleep, so we have to give the person a bed to sleep or respect that they're going to use public property, notwithstanding the fact that it's going to impact everyone else who wants to use that public park or walk on the sidewalk where the homeless have defecated or urinated. And Robert said, well, then why couldn't someone who needs to eat and doesn't have any money, doesn't have a job, why couldn't they rob a grocery store? And the lawyer for the homeless could not really distinguish the two situations. She just said they're different.
Uh-huh.
Robert,
no, it's exactly the same thing. You know, I was joking about that. I didn't know they made that argument because I didn't have time to listen to all 2.5 hours of this. But I said, yeah, can you just walk into Winco because, well, you know, food's a need. Safeway, just go in there and steal it. And after all, it's a human right, right? If you call it a right, then it has to be given to you, I guess, is what they're trying to argue against the city of Grants Pass, right? That's the story. The way this has been done.
Yes, and Chief Justice Roberts is very good in these property rights cases of speaking about the elephant in the room that no one else wants to speak to. For whatever reason, here, that analogy, I don't know, for some reason it frightens people. They don't want to say it because maybe it sounds heartless. Chief Justice Roberts, though, had no problem with it. And I don't think it sounds heartless. I think it just makes the indefensibility of this argument that there's a right for the homeless to sleep because, gee, it's a biological need. Well, there's a lot of biological needs. And we don't say that's a constitutional right. And that's the point Roberts was making here. He's done the same thing in other property rights cases as well. And the advocate was excellent for the homeless. I will give her full credit, but I don't think she won anyone to her side who wasn't already supportive of her, which would have been like, say, Jackson and Sotomayor, Justice Jackson, Justice Sotomayor, and perhaps Justice Kagan, although I'm not sure she won Justice Kagan over.
Mark Miller, once again, Pacific Legal Foundation. In your op-ed piece here on Fox, Supreme Court can fix the homeless crisis that the government caused. How could a proper ruling actually help get more housing? This would be really interesting. What would you say about that, Mark? I'd like to hear more.
Yeah, so the first thing I'd say is I don't write the headlines.
Oh.
And It's an interesting headline, and it is. I did write the piece, so I don't want to be critical of the headline writer, but I guess that's what they gleaned. I guess my point is, over time, the Supreme Court has allowed more and more heavy-handed government restrictions on our property rights, our ability to use our property, such that our ability to use our property is now a permission. And when you say to a home builder or a developer, you're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops and spend a lot of money to get environmental permits, to get local land use permits, to get your house in the right zone or the business in the right zoning, that's expensive. And that drives up the cost of housing for everyone. And in fact, when we look at this issue, obviously people see mental illness and drug addiction as driving the homeless crisis. Those problems are real, but the cost of housing is part of this too. And so if the government were to, if the courts were to tell the government to be more protective of property rights and let people use their property reasonably, just in a non-nuisance manner, I think you'd see the cost of housing, particularly starter housing, come down, which would allow the homeless to perhaps get out of being homeless more easily, more readily.
Mark, I don't think it's any coincidence that one of these crises when it comes to affordability and housing is happening in the state of Oregon. We're the only state in the entire country with state land use planning in which you don't have your local people really in charge of what goes where. You have to run it through state land use planning and the codes and various other things. And it's very heavy handed. And it's all this thing about, trying to preserve or stop sprawl, except that one person's sprawl is another person's affordable home. And they don't seem to want to broach that. And Oregon is very undeveloped as it is right now. What, 15%, maybe 20% of the state is developed, and the rest of it is forest and open land, and public land a lot of times, too.
You know, the nice thing about this issue is it isn't just the Supreme Court that can address it. It's at state level, as you're saying, it can be either made worse or fixed. Governor Gianforte up in Montana and Governor DeSantis in Florida have taken sort of the lead in terms of trying to make it easier and less costly to build housing, to do infill in cities, not that sprawl is a good or bad thing, but rather people own that property and they may want to develop it. If someone wants to buy a house there, why don't we let them build a house so it's not too expensive, such that someone can afford to live there? And so that is, in Oregon, and that's part of the beauty of our system. We should be able to elect people who perhaps recognize housing as a problem, realize throwing money at the problem won't fix it. It just makes housing more expensive when we try to give money to people to buy housing. The sellers realize that.
Everything about Oregon regulatory state, though, is about making it more expensive, because the incentive is to force you into a stack and pack city. Is where the city's goal is. Even with this story, when you hear the term climate friendly equitable community, right? Have you ever heard that term that they're doing here in Oregon?
Yeah. Run for the hills.
In other words, the 15-minute city, you will own nothing and be happy and enjoy your mealworm sandwich because of your climate. Mark, we have some people I think may have a question or comment on this story. It's really interesting. Mark Miller, once again, with the Pacific Legal Foundation, and he's been involved in this case in Grants Pass, and we've all been watching it closely. Let me go to line two. Hi, you're on. Who's this? And you're with Mark Miller.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, this is Terry.
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah, and I don't know if he has the answer to this, but if the ruling goes against Grants Pass, we need to start thinking outside the box even right now before the ruling on what happens if they do rule against it. Is there like ways we can put parks into to have the city sell it to a trust or something for a dollar and then hire the city back? Is there ways to get around this?
That's a really interesting question. Thanks for asking it. Mark, do you have an idea on that?
So I think the city of Grants Pass can be creative and absolutely in addressing and sort of trying to get ready for the Supreme Court decision that will most likely come down by the end of June. And, that may be one option. I would suggest that we need less government, not more government, to address this problem and more city, gospel rescue missions, the private sector to come in and try to help the homeless. But yes, there are definitely many ways to try and address the problem.
To be specific here and get into the arguments, I mean, we're talking about these arguments, though. What is the ask, though? What is the overall ask? They're asking the Supreme Court to say yes or no on what? In other words, they come down one way, it's all sweetness in life or the other. There's always has to be some ask of some judgment, right?
So there's really almost two asks, and that's what's interesting here. Is the first ask, I think, pretty predictable what the Supreme Court's going to do. The first ask is, agree with us, Supreme Court, agree with the City of Grants Pass, that it's okay for us under the Eighth Amendment to fine the homeless in order to try and get them off of our public property and not building these encampments, not sleeping and camping on public property.
And you think they'll be successful on that? Grants Pass will prevail on that one, you believe?
That one, yes. The second question becomes, what do they then say the City of Grants Pass can do? That's a little more of a tougher question to predict because the justices were sort of all over the map. But they, I think they're going to say there's nothing wrong under the Eighth Amendment with fining the homeless or even charging them. The homeless could then say, in an individual case, you can't criminally charge me. I had no choice but to be here. Mm-hmm. Just like Jean Valjean, if you will. If he were to say, hey, I had no choice. It was necessity for me to steal the bread to feed the child. You know, the courts can, you know, consider that. The jury can consider that. But that doesn't mean you can't be charged in the first place. That's where I think they're going to go. But that's the second ask as to what do they do.
Okay.
But the Eighth Amendment has nothing to do with this.
All right. The second part, though, that's the iffy one as far as you're concerned right now, Mark. The other thing I was asking, you know, you at Pacific Legal Foundation, given the lurch of the nation, many of the people, especially younger generations to the left over these last few decades here, are you concerned that we could be getting to the point when you hear this talk about housing is a human right, blah, 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 health is a health care is a human right, and so someone has to give it to me, that sort of thing. Are you ever concerned we're going to turn into that scene from Dr. Zhivago? Remember when the communists essentially just started installing people in the rich doctor's home because, well, he had way more housing than he needed, that kind of thing. Could we see that, you think?
So I am, you know, I'm a positive optimist. I'm a Reagan baby, if you will. And so I do not think our country, I think our first principles will lead us to better results. And yes, some days are better than others in this country in terms of the, you know, how positive I can be versus how cynical. But yes, I do believe our country will never go down that road, even though we certainly have a heart to help people. And that's why we believe in the social safety net. But at the same time, I don't think this country will take that lurch to the left. And maybe I'm being naive, but that is my hope and my prayer for our country.
Do you have a couple more minutes to grab some calls before you take off? I don't know what your schedule's like, Mark. Can you do that?
Happy to do so.
Okay, great. Yep, let me go. I'm going to go to line two. I got three calls all lined up. I don't know who's there. Hopefully they're not raving lunatics. Good morning. Hi, who's this? You're with Mark Miller.
Hey, it's David, and I am a raving lunatic.
Oh, well, good. Go ahead. Please talk.
Just a quick paradigm shift that I won't get too specific, but first of all, I just want to say something. So first of all, not everyone who's homeless is a drug addict, and not everyone who's homeless is mentally ill. A lot of the homeless actually are just financially unable to compete in this crazy world we live in. And I'll tell you something else. People who have adopted this, you know, you might laugh about it, but people who have adopted a somewhat nomadic lifestyle, they are not being plagued with these insane problems we have with inflation, housing prices, and rent. So I think one of the issues we're having is we've been looking at this problem. I mean, at the point where we're trying to regulate where people can sleep, I think it's clear we've been looking at the problem a certain way so long we're missing out on common sense. And I'll tell you right now, I've literally considered getting rid of my house, Bill. And I've asked my wife if we could do it. It is so much money. There is so much land, right? And you look at cultures that live nomadically. It is not worth, these 30-year mortgages are absolutely insane.
But you know, I see where you're going from. I just don't have time to go down, you know, completely there.
Okay.
I'm not big into a nomadic lifestyle, but I can certainly see that. I'm just wondering, and thanks for the call, David. You know something, Mark, is David's call kind of bringing up a point where maybe what's happened here is that the home has been turned into a financialized asset these days. You know, in other words, instead of like a place where we live, it is now turned into a speculative financialized asset, even when you have BlackRock buying up property. You know, that kind of thing? You think that might be a problem that he's kind of referencing almost?
I think, Bill, I think you definitely, that is definitely what the caller is getting at. And that is, there is some degree of truth to that, that when we take our homes and turn them into a place to live, rather than a place to live, it's an investment. To be sure, the investment might be good in some ways because it allows us to, say, borrow against it and invest in a business or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, it has helped drive up the cost of housing for everyone. And as the caller, as David was saying, you know, some people don't want to buy into that system. And when they don't, as long as they're not interfering with anyone else's rights, I don't think the city of Grants Pass or any other city is going to mess with them. It's just when they're camping on public property and interfering with the average other person. Right.
Yeah, yeah. You're camping on public property. You're dropping trow and going to the bathroom in front of everybody. Yeah, that's not exactly what we call a nomadic lifestyle. That is just a disorderly lifestyle. And cities have a right to take care of that. Let me go to line three. You're on with Mark Miller from Pacific Legal. Go ahead. Who's this?
This is Gene.
Hey, Gene. What are you thinking?
Well, for one thing, Jackson County has the sheriff's office has been wanting a new jail.
Yeah.
Instead of building for the homeless, build a new jail, and then the homeless can go into the old jail and sleep on those beds.
They're
nice and hard, I heard.
You know something? It's a very interesting thing. I wonder here, Mark, there has been talk about that. We do have a lack of jail space. Could you actually set up a shelter in an old jail, and would the courts look askance at that? I don't know. It's...
If I was a homeless advocate lawyer, I would argue against it. But yes, I think that if the Supreme Court were to affirm what the Ninth Circuit did, I think you'd have to see creative solutions like she just described. I think the homeless advocates would argue against it and say that somehow that's wrong, too, that that's a punishment.
Yeah,
but I don't know why it's certainly a creative, thoughtful approach to what is a crisis.
Yeah, but of course, it's stigmatizing, you know, that kind of thing. Well, you're staying at the old jail, which is now the homeless shelter. And it's like, well, you're just one step away from the real jail. I can hear the advocates already, the civil rights attorneys. Let me go to line two. Yeah. Hi, you're on with Mark Miller from Pacific Legal Foundation. Fire away.
Yeah. Good morning. My only question is, did the court or anybody talk about personal accountability and personal responsibility? That's one of the foundations of being an American. Where is the individual responsible? I'd really like to hear something about that.
You've been involved in that case, Mark. Could you give us a take on that? What do you think?
That was definitely an undercurrent. No one said it quite the way the caller did, which is certainly, I think, at Pacific Legal, we always are about individual rights and individual responsibility. So I definitely agree with him. But what you saw instead was Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, all bringing up that concept by saying you can't have a class action of the homeless saying all of us deserve beds. Each case should be considered individually. So, for example, my Les Mis reference, or you made your Dr. Zhivago reference.
Yeah.
If the homeless person has no choice but to sleep on public property, truly, they've hit, you know, they've had terrible things happen.
Yeah.
Then on an individual basis, you could say, the courts could say, or the jury might say, yeah, we're not going to convict you because you had no choice. But the idea in this case, which is somehow all of the homeless have a right to a public bed under the Eighth Amendment, that is a bridge too far. Our Constitution is supposed to be about individuals and individual rights. So he's exactly right. And I think most of the justices would have agreed with him that individual responsibility is an important part of this case.
A big concern that I've had has been a lot of government policy, Mark, and I'm sure you're aware of this, has been involved, they call it housing first when dealing with the homeless folks. And the challenge with this is that there are people who are functioning pretty well, and I'm making a judgment call here. We're talking about people, yeah, people have gone bankrupt, people have lost jobs, housing costs have soared, and they're not able to afford it. I've met homeless people that are like that, and they're having great difficulty, even working homeless, having difficulty coming up with first and last and getting in. I understand that. And then there's the other half of the homeless, which is serious. Like there was a guy I saw Sunday morning sleeping in the middle of a sidewalk there with a blanket over his head, and he was half naked, you know, for the rest of him. And you knew you were talking about someone who was addicted and in really serious shape. And just handing someone a home, even at public expense, that probably doesn't solve that kind of a person's problem, does it? And maybe we have to have a more honest talk about it all.
Yeah, although I applaud the idea of housing first in general, I think where they maybe get a little off track is when they talk about housing being a basic human right.
Right.
That last caller, I think, made the point we have an individual responsibility to provide for our own care, and we may need help at times, and you can second guess any number of public policy decisions the country has made, like shutting down of the mental institutions 50 years ago or 70 years ago now. That may have something to do with it too. But the housing first sounds like a panacea, but I think it's a little more complicated than that, which I think is what you're getting at.
Yeah. All right. Let me grab a couple more calls here from Mark Miller from Pacific Legal. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Vern Medford.
Yes, Vern.
And,
go ahead.
Mark, I'd like to take advantage of your legal oversight. Today, the Supreme Court's going to take up this Idaho abortion case. And I listened to the Grants Pass case. It's my first time I've ever tuned in to a briefing with mm-hmm. the Supreme Court, and found it very interesting. And I'm gonna catch the abortion case today. What should we keep our eye on on this case that they're going to listen to today?
In other words, what do you listen for? What sort of points do you want to hear? Are you talking about clues? Is that what you're speaking of, or what?
I don't have a deep understanding of the abortion. It's of Idaho's position on this. They did. It's more a lot more restrictive than Oregon, of course.
Yeah. But. Oh, yeah. Oregon's wide open. Would you have a suggestion for him how to listen? I guess how to listen to the Supreme Court briefing and maybe have a better understanding. Any thoughts on that, Mark? Could you help him?
Yes. So the way I recommend when you listen to an oral argument with this current group of nine justices is instead of thinking of them as 6-3, the Reagan Republican appointees versus Democrat, think of them as 3-3-3. You have Justice Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch on the 1-3. You have Justice Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor as the other three. In the middle is your sort of key three, Kavanaugh, Roberts, and Amy Coney Barrett. And listen to what they're asking and what the implications of what they're asking are. They're often times, as I said earlier, either arguing with each other sort of subtly, or they're flagging where they think they may go, and they want the lawyer to argue against where they want to go to convince them why they're wrong. In this case, I'm not an expert on this EMTALA abortion case, but generally EMTALA is a federal law designed to prevent hospitals from dumping the poor. The hospitals can't reject poor people who come there for help, for health care, emergency health care. And the abortion advocates here, the pro-choice advocates here, are arguing that that law should allow in Idaho more than just abortion for the life of the mother, which is the only exception in Idaho for abortion. They say that anytime there's an emergency, the abortion should be allowed for the mother's health. There's probably more to it than that. But those three in the middle are the key here, because I think we can guess where the three on the one side are going to go and where the three on the other side are going to go. But Kavanaugh, Barrett, and Roberts, do they really want to get further into abortion, or do they want to sort of leave it to the states, as, say, President Trump has said?
See, that is really interesting. You can listen to the other three and three who are taking it more from a conservative and a liberal ideology. It's that mushy middle, right? The mushy middle is probably going to be the decider of where the decision goes, really. Okay.
In most cases, those three, when it's close, you know, on these really hot-button cases like abortion, I think homeless is a little different. There, you never know how they're all going to come down. But the abortion, these hot button cases, you know, school choice, abortion, the girls' sports sort of idea, when that gets there, it is that more simple red blue breakdown. But the three in the middle are the key.
I really appreciate your take on it this morning, Mark, and I highly recommend that people take a look at Mark's op-ed piece on FoxNews.com. Supreme Court can fix the homeless crisis that the government caused. You may not agree with the headline, but you flesh it out more and put some meat on that bone. And so we'll find out about the Grants Pass case, end of June probably at the latest for this one, right?
That's what I would expect. This case, definitely, I think that Chief Justice Roberts is probably going to take all the time he can to bring home. He wants to bring home 9-0 decisions as often as he can to show the court is not politicized. I don't know that he can do that here, but that's what he'll try to do.
All right. Very good. Mark, I really appreciate your work at Pacific Legal. Thank you so much. Great having you on the show.
Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Be well indeed. It is 7:41. We ran really long with that conversation, but, you know, when you have a legal mind like that and people have questions, we're glad to do it on KMED and KCMD.
American Wrencher Garage is your premier auto care provider, serving Medford, Central Point, and the Rogue Valley, providing nothing less than the highest quality standard of professionalism on every single service and repair. Call today. Appointments are available for oil change to engine change. Get the peace of mind you deserve at American Wrencher Garage on Biddle, across from Elmer's. 499-6673. 499-6673. American Wrencher Garage. We stand behind every job we do with service you can trust.
Freedom, prosperity, safety. These are some of the values that made Oregon great. Dr. Noah Robinson will work to preserve our treasured Oregon values.
As your state senator, I'll stand up to the Democrats and lobbyists in Salem, continuing the fight for your parental rights, promoting limited government and protecting unborn lives.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
At Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company, we provide well water services to your home and business from field to tap. Our drilling team will construct your water well, and our technicians at Siskiyou Pump Service can take it from there with pump installation, water filtration systems, and installation of a holding tank if needed. Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company are here for you with complete well water services from field to tap, serving the Rogue Valley for over 50 years. Visit us at siskiyoupump.com.
One of each, Forte VIN 770-783 MSRP 21645 3500 due, Sol VIN 235213 MSRP 22210 3500 due, 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer, plus tax, title, license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 4/30/24.
Making payments on a car you don't want to drive anymore? You need Kia Medford's Payment Wipeout. We're wiping out all the payments you have left on your old car so you can drive a new Kia, like a new 2024 Kia Forte LXS or a new 2024 Kia Soul LX. Just $149 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Get into a new Kia like Fortes or Souls. Your choice, just $149 a month during the payment wipeout at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KCMD.
I'm running behind, but it's okay. That's my show. You know, what can happen other than I just run out of time? But we have Dave who wanted to take David to task. Dave, take it away. I'll give you a bite of the talk radio apple. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks. I'm picking up a coffee, cup of coffee here, too. But look, if you want to be a nomad, go ahead and be a nomad. I don't care how you want to live your life. I just don't want to pay for it. And, you know, in the end, you know, communities, we talked about this before, Bill, communities not long ago were able to decide the standards of what they wanted. They didn't want homeless people, like you said, dropping trow or doing whatever and, you know, peeing in the creek. You know, we could decide that. Now it seems like we can't for whatever reason. But it's an easy problem for David. Move out of Oregon. The problem was created by Oregon with this, with our land use laws and this ridiculous urban growth boundary that we have, okay, that drives everything up. And then we went ahead and legalized drugs. So to David, I'm like, look, there's a bunch of other states where you could go and you won't have the problems that you have here. But if you want to be a nomad or whatever, go ahead. But I don't want to pay for it.
And there's nothing wrong with being with a nomadic lifestyle like he talked about. Now, I know David personally, okay, and I know that he's not he doesn't want you to pay for his stuff. But, and there are many people, younger men and women that are looking at this. And I think some of that's a reaction to the incredible cost of that right now. And it's like the tiny home movement, right? Was it because people really wanted to have a tiny home? No, it's because about the only thing they could afford. See what you're getting at, Dave? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of presumption here, Bill, and a lot of entitlement, thank you, about this whole thing. Just the fact that, you know, look, I'm down and out. I'm this, I'm that. I'm addicted to drugs. You know, nobody, you know, you got to be a pretty heartless person, you know, to kind of look at that and say, oh, well, too bad. But, you know, the presumption that, you know, we should just automatically pay, you know, for you when that happens to you.
Yeah. At what point?
Automatically take care of you.
At one point, you have to care. At some point, you have to care more about your life than we do. Okay. And so.
Well, right.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do to help? Are you ready to help get out of this?
Right.
Because how is this working for you? Oh, it's not. You know, that kind of thing.
Well,
right?
You're right. And eventually the money runs out. And I mean, I hate to bring it kind of down to that. Look, in the old days, we took care of each other. I remember, you know, those times. And I'm not saying there's not a place for a safety net or I'm not saying that at all. But now we're creating this kind of class of this kind of homelessness class, and I just don't think it leads anywhere good.
I appreciate your call, and thanks for making it, all right?
Thanks.
Be well.
All right.
Since I'm so far behind here, if I'm so far behind, I'll at least help you not be so far behind and If you've received an insurance renewal lately, oh my goodness, you're thinking, this is going to put me behind because my homeowner's insurance came in and it went up 15 to 20%. My car insurance came in, oh my gosh, it went up 20, 25%. Ah! Well, I don't want you to be screaming. I don't want your blood pressure to get high. I want you to get in touch with Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance. Sky Park is an independent insurance agency, not just one. Not just one company, many, many, many companies. And Steve gets to work, and he's working the numbers, and he's done that with me to save me money. And it's like, all right, well, this is what's going on. If you want to put the dongle in your car bill, you can save a lot of money. And I said, nope, I'm not going to give any money to Flo. You know, Steve and I have had these kind of conversations, so he puts me in a different company. And I actually choose to pay a little bit more, but to not have the Flo dongle, you know, monitoring me. But you do what you want. One way or the other, he helps me save money, and he'll help you save money, too. Find out if he can do it. Get a quote. 261-5444, 261-5444, or skyparkins.com. Steve Yancey.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MillettConstruction.com.
Hi, this is Lisa, the Hughes Lumber Girl, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Boy, it has been a busy morning, let me tell you. And I ran a little bit long with that conversation with Mark Miller from Pacific Legal, but this was such a big, important case for Southwest Oregon. City of Grants Pass, we're all the City of Grants Pass, really, when it comes right down to it. City of Grants Pass, though, is just the name on the lawsuit, but we're all looking at the same challenges. State Senator Dennis Linthicum rejoins the program. Dennis, welcome back. And, of course, you're running for Secretary of State. And, gosh, we wish you the absolute best on that. By the way, this is a nonpartisan race. So when you're running right now, do you get elected in May, or is this something in which it's a runoff for the general election? Could you explain what happens, how that goes?
Yeah, actually, it is a partisan race.
It is partisan. Okay.
Yeah, there's five Democrats running, three Republicans running. There will be a winner of each of those two party because all show up on Republican ballots, and
good,
none of the Democrats will show up on the Republican ballot. So, and then in the general election, and then the myth is that the office is supposed to be a neutral office or a nonpartisan office. And I think only someone that has integrity can actually pull that off. We saw Shamia Fagan got tied up in all kinds of fraud and, you know, resigned in disgrace and whatever. And
wait, was that the LaMotta case or something else? There were so many.
Yeah, that was the LaMotta case. Yeah.
LaMotta. All right. Sorry. I always think tequila, that old song from the 50s. LaMotta. LaMotta. And you're watching the river of cash spew.
Right.
Out of the places.
Well, and what's interesting is all the arenas that Oregon wants to, if you think about this with a critical eye, I'm quite skeptical of all things government because I don't think government can do things as well as the as private parties, as private citizens, as individuals. I'm keen on individual liberty and allowing the individual to do, you know, as they please within a structured or ordered liberty. We all drive on the right side of the road. There's nothing wrong with having rules about driving on the right-hand side of the road. And we could make up different rules. We could here in Oregon say, we're going to drive on the left-hand side of the road. And everybody would immediately see how tragic this would be when you have people from other states coming into Oregon and all of a sudden they're driving on the right, but you say it's legal here in Oregon to drive on the left, and it would be a mess. So Oregon has gone off the deep end when it comes to making rules about things that it has no business, no authority, no responsibility to make rules for these things. And land use is one of the biggest issues, and land use has hurt people of Oregon far more than it's helped them. We pretend to think, oh, it's for saving green spaces and protecting our wilderness and keeping our trees. We burn more trees than ever got cut.
Oh, I know. We think it's morally superior because you have the bozos that are going, I love the smell of smoke in the winter or in the summertime because it's the smell of the forest being restored. That's Luke Ridiger, I think. Luke, you're welcome to come on the show and talk about it and defend yourself if you wish. But
and that reminds you of, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Exactly.
You know, it's like...
Exactly. Hey, Dennis, you know, and as Secretary of State, though, aren't you on the Lands Commission or aren't you a voting, wouldn't you be a voting member or part of that commission, state land?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The treasurer, Brian Boquist, has the opportunity to be a member of the Lands Commission, as well as myself, going head to head with Governor Kotek and Save Oregon by... You know, diminishing the value of people and their private contracts. Look at what happened to the four Klamath dams. The governors of both states bypass Congress, bypass the will of the people, blow the dams, kill the Klamath River. Right.
And on top of that, they have hung the liability around the necks of the taxpayers in California and Oregon. And that's why I had someone write me the other day about this, Senator. And we're saying, well, why are you talking about the dams? Don't Jackson and Josephine County have enough problems? And I said, well, yeah, we do, except that whether you realize it or not, we're on the hook to pay for all this stuff once the lawsuits start screaming. And you know they're going to. At some point, the lawsuits are just are coming, aren't they? They will be, I figure.
Well, yeah, the KRRC has no capital. Resources. They have no experience. They have never blown a dam before in their lives. They're all rookies, you know, hired on. They got the rights to the dams from Pacific Power for $1. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? And all the public policy, this is at the federal level, so it's really hard. How do you get involved? But, man, why do we have Congress throwing money at Ukraine when we should be throwing money at fixing the problems we create in every city in America?
Hey, wait a minute, young man. Repeat after me. Kyiv, okay? Kyiv. Ooh.
Yeah, I suppose
I'm having fun with you. You know,
On Facebook waving your little yellow and blue flag, aren't you?
No, actually, my Facebook Live is out today. I hope to have it back tomorrow. But be that as it may, if I were here, though, I'd be waving the flag because I wouldn't want anybody coming after me here, Senator. In all seriousness, though, this is true. This is where we find ourselves right now. You know, back on the state causes, or at least how the state of Oregon has contributed to the homelessness problem, what was your overall take with that talk with Mark Miller at Pacific Legal? Because I think he pretty much laid it out there. And you had an interesting response to some of the calls afterwards. I thought it was interesting.
Mark Miller did a fabulous job of explaining it all and steering us and our minds in the right direction. And then the public responses from your listeners was interesting, too. I thought one in particular where the individual says, I'm asking my wife if we should get rid of our home and, take up the nomadic lifestyle.
Right.
And that's a fine question to pursue with your family members. But what's embedded in that is he didn't say I'm a renter or whatever. You know, it sounds like it was a home, you know, and if he's got a home, then that means there's this equity value. There's some value to that home. He could put it on the marketplace. Is he then going to use those personal resources to, you know, pay for his nomadic lifestyle? You know, in public lands, in a federal forest, most of Oregon, almost 50%, 42%, I guess, of Oregon is owned by the federal government. And you could camp in any federal forest, any national forest, any federal forest for up to 2 weeks. This was the rule before the homeless took over. And before you had to move, and you would just have to move so you wouldn't scar the landscape. So,
yeah.
You could do that on a bike. You could do that with boots. You could do that with car. You could do that in any way you chose, and you could live the nomadic lifestyle. And if you, the next caller said, but there's, you got to tie personal, individual, your individual liberty to make that choice. You have to get it tied to, it's two sides of the same coin, to personal responsibility. If you don't have personal responsibility tied to individual liberty, then what you have is a free-for-all, and somebody else is going to pick up the tab. And that somebody else, unfortunately, is the taxpayer, the city of Grants Pass, et cetera, et cetera. And after a while, when everybody sees that the state of Oregon is subsidizing this kind of irresponsible lifestyle, then they will be irresponsible. And when you subsidize something, you get more of it. And the last thing we need as a state and nation is to subsidize irresponsibility. The Biden administration is doing worse than subsidizing. They're promoting irresponsibility. They're bringing millions of foreign-born nationals, illegal aliens, into the United States. And this is, you know, and they're from every planet, or every planet, yeah, right, every nation on the planet. And so it's not that it's I'm against Hispanics, or against Chinese, or I'm against Taiwanese, or I'm against Russians. It's where are these military-age men coming from, and what is the true purpose behind this? We have lost our sense of freedom, and responsibility go hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree with you, Senator Linthicum. Senator Linthicum, Dennis Linthicum, of course, running for Secretary of State. And, of course, I certainly hope that you will vote appropriately in May, okay? And I wanted to touch on something. Having you as Secretary of State would be, well, the last honest Secretary of State we had, in my opinion, is frankly was Dennis Richardson, the late Dennis Richardson. And I do find it ironic that you share the first name. So
yeah, Dennis Squared, right?
Yeah, exactly, Dennis Squared. And Dennis was much like you in the respect of trying to be incredibly fair about that, which is not the way the Secretary of State's office has been run for many, many years since his passing. I got to tell you, it has not been a good, it has not been a good position to be in.
Well, yeah, and I think that's at the crux of the issues facing Oregon. Oregon has become accustomed to single party rule, and you, everybody in your listening audience knows that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard that. Everybody recognized that. Everybody knows that. That's why in the business environment, ooh, we hate monopolies, and we, you know, always are ranting and railing against monopolies.
Oh, but we're okay with political monopolies in the state of Oregon. That's good. That's a public good, isn't it?
Yeah, somehow, how is it the public monopoly has escaped our perspective? Why is it we don't realize, wait, public monopolies are every bit as dangerous? And so that single party rule has led to this, hey, I'm of the party, I can do no wrong. And the Secretary of State's office, look at, right now we have so many rules, so many regulations, so many burdens that the average individual has to put up with, whether they're opening a coffee shop, a burger stand, or trying to build a home. Land use laws are so horrendous, urban growth boundary, zoning, all of these things. And the lie is we're doing this to protect public spaces. We're doing this to protect our farmland. This is exclusive farmland.
This is pushing ultimately the way it's being used to leverage in these days, Senator, is that this is being used to leverage an anti-human agenda under the guise of climate change. I think you understand that too. I don't think I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Well, yeah, and as we see it, you know, this anti-human, we're going to save the salmon, blow the dams, kill the river. You know, some brain-dead biologist dumped 850,000 fish into that turbid water and killed all million of those fish. I'm going to round up just for easy numbers. did he get fired? You know, did anybody say, what were you thinking? Why did you do that?
And no, hey, listen, I watched that television report, and there was a biologist saying, hey, you know, the rivers never looked healthier, Dennis. I'm going, right. Like, what? Wait a minute. You know, this is the level of gaslighting, I think, that we've risen to in our society. And it's almost like, okay, you're a have or a have not. Have or have not is not economics these days. It's like, do you have a brain and can you actually analyze something, or do you have not and just mindlessly consume what's being fed to you, I think.
And it is mindless. They show a picture of these, you know, men in their mud boots up to their knees walking through the lake bottom that used to be a reservoir that people water skied and swam and enjoyed recreating in, and we used for putting out forest fires. And they show them in this mud pit with a little green sprout, you know, some weed from somewhere. And they say, oh, the river, it was recovering faster than we expected. And it's like, who are these guys? And how can they publish that picture with such marketing propaganda and expect the average reader to see that picture and marry their stupid comment and say, this looks like valid scientific truth to me. This looks like a complete lie and a farcical conversation that's being brought on the schnookered public. Yeah. It's criminal. It's at some point, this is criminal. They're taking public money and pouring it down the river, and that river will be decades before it gets back to what we think of as normal.
Well, even look at the Elwha. Elwha is still not even close to being recovered. And of course, it's the same sort of promises. Oh, just give us a few years and the fish will come. Bring it back. We'll be able to walk across the river and there'll be so many fish, you know, coming back up, right? Remember those? It's just bizarre.
And so what we need is fewer experts. We need to get these policy and decision-making skills out of the hands of people who don't have decision-making skills. They don't know math. They don't know that 2 + 2 really is 4, has always been 4, and will forever be 4. And if they don't know that much and they can't recognize, you know, truth from fiction or fact from myth, then we shouldn't be letting them make these choices. We should be deciding on our own economic prosperity and economic benefit. We do not need these public servants, as they love to call themselves. I really think they're not servants at all. They're gaming the system. They're performing for their own benefit. And we really need to, I think one of the things that that the Secretary of State's office will provide us is a auditing tool to investigate some of these facts, some of these details, and raise some questions so that the public says, oh my, look at that. And it'll be these tasty nuggets that we discover deep in the bowels of the system. And we don't need more government. We don't need more spending. We don't need go along, get along Republicans. We need Republicans who will stand fast to truth and pursue actual justice, true justice, not social justice. Social justice has no definition.
Indeed. State Senator Dennis Linthicum, candidate for Secretary of State. And we wish you well on that journey for sure here, Dennis. Always appreciate the talk, and we'll have you back. You take care. Have a good day. Sorry you ran a little bit late getting in there, okay? Just what happens sometimes.